Today's episode of Expanded Perspectives is brought to you by Gaia.com, G-A-I-A.com. And Gaia, if you don't know already, is a video streaming service, and they have over 7,000 exclusive videos over there. They're ad-free, and they're member-supported, and they have several categories, like yoga, and into that category, Cam, they got things like transformation, they've got yoga practices, yoga series, yoga lifestyle, meditation, fitness, Pilates, things like that. They have another section called Seeking Truth, and this is perhaps my favorite section. They have original programs over there. They have shows about metaphysics. They have shows about secrets and government cover-ups, ancient origins, and, of course, the paranormal and unexplained. In addition to that, they have films and documentaries. I recently talked about one called Mirage Men, about how the government was actively employing people to go out there and put out disinformation. And I love, there's millions and millions of more to watch over there. There's three offers to choose from. There's a three-month plan. That's $20 for 3 months. After that, your payment will be $9.95 a month. They have a monthly plan where if you sign up now, 99 cents for the first month. And after that, it'll be $9.95. And they have an annual plan that's $95.40. You save 20% basically if you re-up for the annual plan. But I suggest you go over there. You can watch this on Apple TV. You can watch this on Roku. You can watch this through Chromecast, AirPlay, Android. They even have an app. So you can watch this on the go or at home. And they're constantly adding new videos over there. It's kind of like Hulu and Netflix. Mm-hmm. And I really enjoy it. I mean, they got a lot of cool things on there. That I think a lot of you listeners would really enjoy. That's Gaia.com, G-A-I-A.com. Also, another sponsor is Blue Apron. Now, Blue Apron is the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. And what I like about them is that it's their mission to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. Now, they achieve this by supporting, you know, more sustainable food systems. Mm-hmm. They set the highest standards for their ingredients, and they like building a community with home chefs. Now, when I got my package, it was on the front porch when I got home from work. It was packed in a cooler, like a styrofoam cooler. It had some packets in there and ice. They had all the ingredients in there. They had all the food. Everything was very easy to do. Step-by-step picture instructions telling you how to prepare the meal. And me and, you know, Jacob, I have three boys, Jacob, Caleb, and Luke. But Jacob seems to be very interested in cooking. Like, he likes to help me. Just recently, I was teaching him how to cook chicken fried steak. You know, that's a nice Southern luxury. Yep, and he had a really good time with it. So, you know, Caleb, he could care less. When the Blue Apron comes, Jacob gets excited because it's something new for him and me to do together, father and son. And, you know, research shows that people who cook together, the family bonds actually are stronger. Mm-hmm. And that's what Blue Apron is trying to do. They got some pretty cool upcoming meals. Cam, what do you think about these?
Look, I'm going to tell you right now, what I like the most about Blue Apron myself is with my daughter, she's kind of picky with what she eats. I'm kind of picky sometimes with what I eat. They cover everything. So it's not just like they're only going to pump out one thing. That's what I enjoy the most about it. Crispy barramundi with quinoa and roasted carrot salad.
Barramundi is a fish, by the way.
Yes, it is. Cashew chicken stir fry with tango mandarins and jasmine rice. You also get roasted pork with apple, walnut, and farro sauce, or udon noodle soup with miso and soft-boiled eggs. That's what's coming up. So it covers something that everybody's going to enjoy.
Yeah, like I said, you know, cooking together builds stronger family bonds, and research shows that Blue Apron families actually cook nearly three times more often. The cost is cheap. It costs about $10 a person for these delicious home-cooked meals. It's affordable. I like you were mentioning, the variety. There's new recipes each week, and they don't repeat throughout the entire year. And you can, like I said, you can save the instruction cards, and you can, like, if you really enjoy one of the meals, you can go back to the grocery store and reproduce it.
Do it yourself, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to cook, folks. Easy to cook. It's 40 minutes or less.
That's right.
That's what they pump out. It's simple.
Yeah, and it's flexible. You can customize what you want each week, when you want it, when you don't want it. You can go onto their website. You can pick the meal that you want and the days.
I'm a big fan now.
I'm
getting hooked.
It's really a lot of fun. I think most people, if they ever tried it, they would like it too. So you'll love how good it feels and tastes to create this incredibly home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So do not wait. Just visit. If you want to get up, you want to get signed up, go to blueapron.com/expanded, and you can get started today. Go ahead and go to the website, check out this week's menu, and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/expanded. That's blueapron.com/expanded. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. Cam, you ready to get the show going?
Let's kick this puppy off.
Let's do it.
Howdy, everybody, and thanks again for joining Kyle and I here on Expanded Perspectives. Oh, that's right, folks. He is with me. We've been laughing. It's a little different today. We've been off the rails giggling about stuff because what's funny is we're actually recording this pre-Super Bowl because we don't watch the Super Bowl. We don't care anything in the world about the NFL or professional football.
Not really.
So we're just like, let's go ahead and record it, and then let's just make an excuse to go eat something. So we've been in here laughing, but you found us. We're here on Expanded Perspectives. Philly O's sitting here with me. We are going to have a wonderful time today. Kyle, you've got to tell me, which team does the Brud play for? Jacob got picked for a team. I mean, you ain't let me know on this. Which one is it?
He is playing for the Rangers.
Yes! It's so much easier to find shirts and caps.
I already own several, so, right?
Right?
Makes it really,
awesome.
Really easy.
Was he excited?
He's excited. He's excited, but I don't think he's going to be so excited when he actually starts practice.
Uh-oh.
The new coach, man, he seems like a no-nonsense kind of guy. I mean, he's talking about working these boys hard.
Well, when I first got
here, which is going to be good for him, but I don't think Jacob's going to enjoy it at least the first couple weeks.
Well, he come running over there to me, and I said, what did you meet your coach? And of course, and all that stuff. He didn't tell me he was playing for. He's like, yeah. I said, what'd you think? He's like, man, he went to the championship last year. He goes, he didn't win. He come in second. I go, yeah, but he got his team to the championship. He's like, yeah. He goes, this is going to be tough. So he has already probably got a feeling this is going to be work is what this is about to be.
Well,
but they're getting to the age now to where they get very competitive, so it's kind of building towards that.
Yeah, well, Jacob, because of his age, he's 9 years old. He turns 10 in May, but because of that, he's forced to move up. So he's in the majors now. So Jacob's literally the youngest kid on the team.
Ooh.
Half the other boys are 12.
Ooh.
So Jacob's 9, and the most of the boys are 12. So he's going to be playing big boy baseball,
uh-huh.
And it's going to be rough on him.
If you can't swim, you bound to drizzle.
Well, you know from the many hours spent on the mats of jiu-jitsu and stuff, you know, working and training with people that are much better than you is going to make him better.
Everybody was better than me, so.
So I told my wife, I mean, that's exactly what I talked to her about. I said, this is going to be it. This season, we're going to find out if he's going to break and quit and never do it again, or if he's going to move on.
If he's going to take it and
because
run
it's going
to
be, it's starting to get serious now.
Good. This I can't wait. It's going to be fun.
Oh, I can't wait either. I want to see how he performs under pressure.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be good times. Hey, what have you got for me? Let's fire this puppy up.
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. This comes from Gizmodo.
And uh-oh.
It's called, the title of this article was Why Chewing Sounds Make You Want to Flip a Table. Now, when I saw this article, it reminded me of my brother so much. For some reason, for some people, like the sound of snapping of gum or slurping of soup makes them go crazy. They despise it. And if that person is you, you likely have misophonia. For you that have misophonia, these sounds are more than merely annoying. They're rage-inducing. Being trapped in a room full of snappers and slurpers is enough to make you want to walk away or set yourself on fire.
LP might actually have that.
Yep. All too often, folks with misophonia, which literally means hatred of sound, are dismissed as being overdramatic, but new research suggests that they aren't just making this up. There's actually a neurological basis for their anger. Now, a team of scientists at Newcastle University in the UK studied the reactions to different sounds among 42 people, 20 with misophonia and 22 without. The group played various noises for these individuals while they were hooked up to an MRI machine and ramping up the annoying level each time, while non-misophonics also felt annoyed by sounds of like crying babies. Only those with misophonia displayed deeply visceral reactions to sounds like loud chewing and loud breathing. The researchers' findings were published in February, to Current Biology magazine. Cam, I know you have a subscription to that.
I just got my newest subscription in, so maybe I need to read that.
The researchers have found that brains of misophonics were literally wired differently from those of us who don't have misophonia. The MRI scans indicated that misophonics had an extremely active anterior insular cortex, or AIC, an area of the brain associated with emotions. So when they trigger these sounds, these people who have misophonia, the wiring in their brain actually makes them get agitated and kind of angry at these sounds, where other people, they're just able to dismiss it. They're just like, oh, you're just being overly dramatic. It's not. Their brains are different.
I get that way in a vehicle. If there's like a squeak, or like when you're driving and you can hear something in the back seat or something rubbing and all that stuff, and my family gives me a hard time about it, because I mean, I've literally pulled over on trips and unloaded stuff out of the car to find where the sound's coming from and repack it so I don't hear it while I'm driving.
I have it
I get the anger, like I get mad now. It just makes me so aggravated with that sound.
See, I'm pretty sure my brother has it. I don't. I get annoyed by sounds. Everybody does that. I'm talking about people that feel like real anger.
Yeah, I get really angry in the vehicle when things going down. I'm like, what is that sound?
One common occurrence for me is in my bedroom, our ceiling fan, if it's real quiet, it makes a sound where it almost sounds like a siren, like down the street going
like
off.
Like a high pitch.
And I can't tell you how many times I've laid there in the morning, half asleep, and they're like, what is that siren? And then I have to tell myself, no, stupid, it's the fan.
Yeah, I think your brother gets rage-induced about these things.
He used to get, furious. He would come home as a youngster and complain to my mother about how loud the people were chewing in school. I've been to dinner with him, and he'll be like, can you hear that guy chewing over there? I'll be like, no, I never heard that. How in this loud restaurant did you hear a dude chewing?
Or drinking, you take like a big drink and swallow hard, and he just like...
I used to do that all the time.
Yes, I remember this.
Anyways... If you have this condition, then your brain is wired differently. So tell people that you're not being overly dramatic, that you have a disability, man. Leave me alone. Yeah. Quit chewing loud.
Now, he's overdramatic, folks. Trust me, he's overdramatic. Take your overdramatic hand and get your pen and paper over there, Brud, for case number 81674. This comes from our buddy Roger Marsh over at openminds.tv.
Word.
The reason I bring this up is we were discussing a while back when they were talking about the launch of was it Elon Musk, SpaceX launched that one, and it blew up, and they thought they saw a UFO in the background.
I remember that.
In the video?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is a witness spots UFO while waiting for a rocket launch. A Florida witness at Titusville reported watching an oval-shaped object crossing the sky, and this is a quote, shrouded in the bright meteor-like light while waiting for the Atlas V rocket launch. Says the events occurred about 8:15 on January 19th of 2017. The lady says, my husband and I were in the viewing bleachers for the launch of the Atlas V rocket carrying a missile detecting satellite. We were in a launch delay. I was standing in the bleachers and others were sitting. Now she goes on and says she started by staring at the sky because she had heard about UFOs, sometimes frequent launches. So she's being cautious. She's looking, right? She's already, I'm checking it out. I was looking towards the east and suddenly I saw an extremely bright yellow-green light. And it was wide and it was close. It was horizontal to the ground and it streaked by us. And I yelled, look! And people in the stands caught a glimpse. It was so fast that many missed it, but some didn't. And the woman behind me who was sitting down and just caught a glimpse said it was a meteor. I said, no, there was something in it. So she goes on to describe what she saw in this meteor trail. Says just before the yellow-green streak of light vanished, for a fleeting bit of a second, I saw part of something metallic. It had a seam and a shape that was rounded, but the yellow-green light obscured all but a small part of the object. I know what I saw, and there was definitely something in that light. That says the launch was scrubbed due to a wayward aircraft in the flight path above the object. So she goes on to say, we all got on the buses and left, but I was still filled with the excitement as I believe that was a UFO. I checked the web and cannot find any record of a meteor on that night. So, is this, what do they call, pareidolia? What is, you know what I'm, where your mind only sees right, what you wanted to. Did she really see that for a split second? Or is it one of those things that we talked about?
She saw it in that video, and so now she's thinking
well,
that's what she's seeing.
And not just that. When you think back sometimes and you see like a blur out of the corner of your eye, you're like, was that a rabbit, a cat, a deer? What was that?
Yeah.
And then you're like, I think that was a rabbit. I remember seeing its white puffy tail. Do you, or was that just what it is the closest as it resembled?
So that's she what saw I'm a metallic looking object.
Object, yes.
So what I'm
in there.
The first thing that the first place my mind goes.
And now mind you what, not to cut you off, but she said it was that shape, that it was rounded also.
Right, okay. But the first, when I'm hearing that, I'm not saying she's making this up. I believe she probably saw something. My first idea, if me and you were going to launch a rocket like that, wouldn't you want it filmed from many angles? Could it be possible that there were several drones in the area videotaping the launch?
But they wouldn't look like a meteor. That's what she's talking about. Is it streaking across the sky when it come like stripping past them? But I see what you're saying. Maybe the sun was playing off of it at a certain angle. You know, who knows?
Right.
There's a lot of other things because the way she was, and a lot of other people saw it.
Or it could be a UFO.
Or exactly.
I mean, could be.
Well, it is a UFO.
Well, yeah, by,
I mean,
the technical
by
terms.
Definition, yes, yeah. It's a UFO. But I don't know. I mean, it's just what caught me was the idea is why is it always around launches? A lot of launches, they show up. Now, it could be what you're talking about. Other thing, you know, them trying to film it, view it, things like that. That's an easy, you know, that's probably the right explanation.
I think I try to tell myself these things because I don't want to think that there's actually extraterrestrials watching everything we're doing.
They could come get you out of your house.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that.
Exactly.
So I'm always like, oh, no, man, that had to be, your mind was playing tricks on you.
Yeah, you know what? It's a safe bet. I'm going with you on that.
If I saw something like that, I'd be just like, I'm going to pretend I didn't see that. Just move on.
Moving on, yeah.
Speaking of strange sightings, our friend Lon Strickler over there at Phantoms and Monsters just posted something I found really interesting. He said that he received an email from a guy recently, and it talked about a sighting he had. It says, it was in 2013. My father worked at a company located off the road behind AK Steel in Lindora, Pennsylvania, near Butler, Pennsylvania. I was driving to pick him up from work one night and caught a glimpse of something in the sky. It was huge. It had wings of what looked like a prehistoric animal, like a pterosaur. It looked to be around 8 to 10 feet in its wingspan. I never told my father what I saw right before I picked him up. It scared the you-know-what out of me, and still does when I think about what I had seen. Now, Lon talks about he emailed the guy back and hasn't found out anything, but it reminded him of another sighting that Stan Gordon talked about that back in 2014, a witness said that they saw some winged humanoid, and they reported it to Stan Gordon in the same area as this sighting in Pennsylvania. And this is what Stan's Gordon's, the sighting that was sent to him said. The witness wrote, on March 21st, 2011, I was contacted by a witness who reported having an encounter with a very strange creature during the early morning hours of March 18th, 2011. The incident occurred on a rural road in Butler County between Chicora and East Brady. The witness, who is a businessman, passing through the area, stated that this was the freakiest thing I ever saw, and it made the hair stand up on the back of my neck. The man told Stan Gordon that he was driving down the road when, from about a quarter mile away, he observed something on the right side in a grassy area. His first thought was that it was a deer. The driver stepped on the gas to move closer to get a better view. From about 50 yards away, he observed something that appeared to be hunched down and then stood up. The driver then observed a very tall, muscular creature. At this point, the driver had his high beams on and watched as the creature walked in front of a yellow reflective road sign, then crossed the two-lane road in three long steps and continued off into the wooded area. What he saw was a humanoid figure that stood at least 8 feet tall that appeared to have smooth, leather-like skin that was either a darker tan or light brown. The creature never looked at the witness and was only observed from its side. The head appeared to be flat in the front section and then rounded out. At the top, in the back of the skull, it was like one of those aerodynamic helmets. The top was not quite a point, but looked like a ridge on top of the head. The face was flat, and the eyes were not clearly defined, but the man thought they might have been pointed in the corners. The ear that they observed on the left side was long and flat and came up the back and was pointed backwards like a flap. It says the arms were muscular and a little bit longer than that of a human, and the hands looked more like a claw. So he's describing Jeepers Creepers. That's what the guy saw.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
I mean, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like the creeper. Now, what could that be? And what reason Lon posted this is this sighting happened back in 2011, and this sighting that just was sent to him happened in 2013, but it's in the exact same part of Pennsylvania.
He woke back up
Butler
again.
County. So is right. Is there truly a creeper, Jeepers Creepers, lurking in that area of Pennsylvania? Or did this new person read this story on Stan Gordon's website and then create the same story? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, say there was a...
Or did Jeepers Creepers, is there actually some history that's based upon? Some old wives' tale.
I don't know, but I told,
you know what I mean?
I told the boys it was real.
Ooh!
Like every 26 summers, man.
He's coming back. He's coming back, boys.
And they were like, well, how many years ago was that? I was like, I think it's been about 23 years. So somewhere in the next 3 years, you ought to be back. They're like, really? Of course, 3 years from now, they won't believe it anymore. But right now, they're scared.
Yeah.
Luke's at the age where nothing terrifies him. So he just looked, it could be the scariest image on the screen. And he's just like, what kind of monster is that?
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't faze him.
You got to go to Japan to get Godzilla eggs.
Back to the story, what could that be if this is real? What could that be?
Like, what could you misidentify it
for?
Nothing. There's nothing that you can misidentify
a
gargoyle.
8-foot-tall gargoyle. I'm so excited. I'm so perplexed. I can't speak, folks.
Yeah. You don't misidentify
that. My tongue's swelling as I think about it.
It would be a terrifying image. The humanoid thing would be a terrifying thing, the flying humanoid, to see that.
I'm going to ask Ken Gerhard what he knows about sightings in that area. I'm going to be speaking with him very soon.
And he'll be up here in March.
Yeah. I know, yeah. So
we have to get him to come in studio.
He wrote an excellent book called Flying Humanoids or something like that. I don't have it in front of me.
Encounters with Flying Humanoids.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Yeah. It's got like the Jeeper Creeper on the front of the book.
Yeah.
Very interesting fella. Very interesting stories.
Well, I tell you what, as long as you're going to be talking about flying stuff, I'm going to hold on to the flying stuff. We're going to keep going. This comes from your friends and ours, folks, Cryptozoology News.
Yes.
A kid finds a dinosaur bird in Minnesota. Minneapolis, Minnesota resident says that he saw a dinosaur-like bird. This is a kid. 14-year-old boy named Logan says he and his friends were skateboarding next to a lake when they found this winged creature. This is what Logan has to say. We got off of our boards and walked over to walk to the boat access. Says we walked down by the lake just to skip rocks and stuff, and we both saw it. The afternoon sighting reportedly lasted about 5 minutes. The boy described the creature as a featherless bird with a crest on its head and a long beak curved towards the back at the end. So it kind of goes up and curves back at the end.
Right.
Says, but it had no tail. This is what he says. It was huge.
It was Rodan.
It was huge. It flew low across the lake, turning quite sharply for its size, and then just flew away towards the town square on the other side of the lake. He says, but it gained a lot of height very quickly, and then it disappeared into the clouds. And he says that he is sure what he saw was not a known bird. He says, I told my parents and other friends, and nobody believed me. So me and my friend went on our computer and looked it up. We are now certain it was the Thunderbird, is what he says, which is also known as Rock. It's the nomenclature used by the Native Americans to refer to a bird-like creature with reptilian features that are believed to be related to extinct pterosaurs. So, this boy allegedly saw a pterosaur, which still goes into funny because we don't really know if they were, you know, leathery, because we've talked about it before. A lot of scientists are coming out now where they believe that those pterosaurs were actually covered in feathers.
Yeah.
So, what are we building in our, you know what I mean? It's funny we only see these things. Now science comes out, like we've talked about, 50 years from now, they're going to still be sighting these giant bird sightings, but they're all going to be feathered birds instead of the ropin or the pterosaur looking bird.
Yeah.
Isn't that strange?
It is strange.
It is funny. But like we said again, unless they're just two boys with very vivid imaginations, and it very well could be, what do you make a mistake of that for? How do you pull that out of something else? How do you see a buzzard or a condor? It's one thing to say you saw a giant bird with giant wings and giant feathers and all this, but when you see this ropin, if he's telling the truth, I know it's a big if, but if he's telling the truth, what do you misidentify that for? What out there looks like that?
Well, I always want to know when these sightings are reported too, if they're seeing what looks like a pterosaur, what looks like Rodan, what looks like one of these flying winged dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. My first question always is, are they physically seeing something real, or are they seeing like an apparition? You know what I mean? Like if you were to see your dead grandmother, it wouldn't be a physical representation, it'd be an apparition, a ghostly image. Mm-hmm. Is it really there, or are they just seeing an apparition of a dinosaur? Like somehow time, for whatever, like kind of skips. And
it's dilated into our existence.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you.
I wondered the same thing about Sasquatch and stuff. I mean, there's, you know, maybe it's ethereal. That's why I never find any bones.
Yeah.
Just because you're seeing it doesn't mean it's a physical thing. But then when you find the footprints, then you're like, well, yeah, it's physical.
Yeah. That's a good question. An excellent question.
Or, you know, was it, I don't know, could somebody possibly have like a remote control airplane that looks like a pterosaur?
I guess
and say it's so far away you couldn't hear the engine, and the guy was flying it around. I mean, certainly people use drones and they make them look like UFOs,
or
and fly them over skid parks. I saw one where it looked like a witch, and the dude was flying it around the park around Halloween.
I've seen one that looks like a cat. They put like a cat, like it's hovering on that drone.
I've seen that.
And they have that cat flying around.
Yeah. So you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like, could somebody be doing something similar with something that looks like a dinosaur? And like, say somebody was flying at this park, they don't even know that I'm over here seeing it. And I'm like, look, there it is.
Yeah. Could be. Yeah.
You never know.
Very well could be.
It could be 100% real.
It could be a big rope and a big pterosaur, something along those lines. Folks, we're going to go into break right quick. When we come back from break, I'm going to be discussing something just west of Weatherford here in Texas. Has to do with some ghostly tales that I think you're going to enjoy, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I'm looking forward to today's show because on the last Elite show, Cam had been bringing up these haunted lakes and places around Texas. Now, the name of the episode was Dark Waters. And I love these stories. I had no idea that so much of this is taking place nearby where I live. And the place he's going to be talking about today, I am familiar with. So I can't wait to find and listen to what he's, you know, dug up.
Yeah. You're good. It's, well, first of all, folks, I'm going to get into it. And a lot of you that are from around this area may already know, and a lot of you, this is going to become something completely new. I'm going to be discussing the Baker Hotel. It's kind of near and dear to our heart because it's something we've grown up by. But as all of y'all know by now, we love sharing the strange and unusual that comes from right here in the great state of Texas. And of course, today is no different. This one is funny, though, because I've driven by it countless times, heard the stories my whole life, and I've even been inside of this place, yet I didn't have any story, you know, happen to me, nothing. So I didn't really have anything to share. I think maybe it's because it's such commonplace, and I was so used to it being there that I simply became complacent to this building. It just, nothing really happened. And of course, like I said, this place that I'm discussing was brought back to my attention because of last week's Elite show, when I talked about haunted lakes in Texas, like Kyle alluded to. I talked about taking Highway 180, heading west, of course, out of Skeleton Studios, and that's exactly where we're going to go today. 19 miles west of where we're sitting at this very moment is the town of Mineral Wells, Mineral Wells, Texas, and it is home to the magnificent Texas history. There's a lot of it there, as well as some great tales of ghosts. Now, with a population just shy of 20,000, Mineral Wells has known its share of tough times, folks. The town has suffered ups and downs like many small towns across this country. You see, Mineral Wells was once a very booming place, once the home of Fort Walters. Now, during World War II, over 200,000 infantry trainees cycled through the halls of Fort Walters. And when it was reopened as the Army's primary helicopter school, folks, there was over 40,000 student pilots graduated from there, and most of those got sent to Vietnam. See, it was an army camp from 1925 to 1946, and then during World War II, Camp Walter served as a German POW camp, and then it became an Air Force base in 1951, and it has its sole mission of training Air Force engineers. Another little tidbit about Camp Walters was on that location, two of the war's most famous enlisted infantrymen did their basic training there, Mr. Audie Murphy and Mr. Eddie Slovic. See, Audie Murphy completed basic training there, and he's also the most decorated, one of, American combat soldiers during World War II. But Slovic was convicted of desertion in November of 1944, and on the 31st of January 1945 became the first member of the U.S. military since the American Civil War to be executed for desertion. So it was a special category Army personnel with the Air Force base area there from 51 to 56, and then it was the primary helicopter school for the U.S. Army from 56 to 73. It was deactivated in 73. You all can only imagine the hit the local economy took when a base of this size closed its doors. The base now sits in disrepair mainly, and it's used as an industrial park now with some businesses and machine shops calling it home. Even Weatherford College has a building out there now. The other hit was dealt to Mineral Wells when the TDC, for those unfamiliar, is the Texas Department of Corrections, pulled its contract from CCA, the Corrections Corporation of America, causing the pre-parole facility there on the base in Mineral Wells to close for good. But see, it wasn't always this way for the city of Mineral Wells. No, it was once an amazing place visited by thousands looking for the magic of the crazy water that bubbles up from beneath our soils. See, in the late 19th century, Texas was well known for its mineral water resorts. Henry Sergist, a medical historian, reported that Texas had the second most mineral springs of any state, trailing only Wyoming. Though at this time, Texas was not regarded as having some of the most luxurious spas in America, people flocked to Texas by the thousands and were consumed with the mineral springs for one reason, that they believed the benefit for the healthy qualities of the water. The greatest spa resort growth in Texas was from 1890 to 1919. And over this time, over 100 new places were established around these spas. It was during this time that the mineral water madness of Mineral Wells was discovered. And it's how the town basically formed its identity. See, in 1877, James Lynch and his wife, Armanda, left the town of Denison, Texas, and they had 9 children. So them and their 9 children, they brought a bunch of livestock with them. They left and they went searching for a little bit drier climate because their family had been in very poor health. See, both James, who was 50 years old whenever they left Denison, and Armanda, his wife, both suffered from rheumatism. Well, they were stopped on their trip by news of Comanche attacks further west, and on Christmas Eve of 1877, one of the oxen that was pulling one of their carts died after crossing the Brazos River, and another was struck by lightning. So they decided to say, hey, look, we're done. We're going to settle down here. They tucked themselves away in the hills of Palapena County. Well, Mr. Lynch purchased 80 acres of land from the Franco Texas Land Company at the mind-boggling price of $240. And in 1877 until 1880, the Lynches hauled water from the Brazos River up to their home 4 miles away. Well, in the summer, a Mr. John Adams happened upon the Lynch Ranch, and Mr. Adams was a well driller. So he agreed with Mr. Lynch that he would drill a water well on their property in exchange for a yoke of oxen. And at first, of course, the Lynches were kind of hesitant to drink the water because it had a funny taste, and they were afraid that there might be poison in that water. But as we all know, the work it takes hauling water 4 miles, nobody really wants to spend their day doing that. So they all started drinking the water. And when they found out, it's not that harmful, they all begin drinking well water throughout the day. And then something strange happened. The Lynch's rheumatism was cured. And Mr. Lynch, who was once very gaunt and a frail man, started putting on weight. And then the entire family started feeling better and all turned their health completely around. And boom! Crazy water is now on the map. Now, people hear the tale, they show up and they experience these benefits of this crazy water. So people start digging their own wells and selling their own water, jumping on this bandwagon and making money hand over fist. And by the dawn of the 20th century, Mineral Wells dominated the Texas spa resort market and was known as the nation's greatest health resort. So in the early 1900s, Mineral Wells had a population of approximately 8,000 people. But each year, the town welcomed over 150,000 visitors, and the railroads in that area reported an annual sales of 45,000 tickets for people solely traveling to Mineral Wells. And in 1909, they were 4 bathhouses, 7 wells with covered pavilions, 2 sanitariums, and 46 hotels and boarding houses. And by 1913, there were 21 mineral water companies in this town. In the early days of the resort era, at this time, there was a thing called hotel life, and it was very basic, and it was centered around these waters. See, there was very few leisure or social activities even offered at the time, so the typical boarding house was this: a simple 2-structure home that had rooms costing between $7 and $10 a week, and when you bought that, you normally got 3 meals a day. Well, like any good businessman, Acar P. Collins, businessman from Dallas, heard about all this, decided, I'm going to make some money. So he built the Crazy Water Hotel. The Crazy Water Hotel had 200 guest rooms, a barbershop, dining rooms, little shops, doctor's offices, bookstores, a florist, a recreation department, a pavilion and bathhouse where you could also drink the water. And on that pavilion, there was upwards of 4 employees every day working from morning until late at night, drawing water and bringing it to the customers waiting in line. Now that's right, folks. 4 people working the whole day, daylight till dark, to deliver water. Water. Now, the 7-story Crazy Hotel also had a rooftop garden, a huge lobby, where there was also orchestras and bands would play there in nationally broadcast shows. But, like most small towns, the locals didn't take kind to a fella from Dallas outdoing their town. And it was this competitive spirit that birthed the Great Baker Hotel. Overseen by the famous Texas hotel man T.B. Baker, that on November 22nd of 1929, the majestic Baker Hotel opened its doors. Built exactly double the size of the Crazy Water Hotel, the Baker stands 14 stories tall, has 450 guest rooms, medical clinics, tennis courts, an entire floor dedicated to mineral baths and massage, of course shopping, a beauty salon, a drinking pavilion, an outdoor pool, and was actually the home of the famous Brazos Club. So for this time, folks, the Baker was built for $1.2 million and modeled after the Spanish Renaissance style of the Arlington Resort Hotel and Spa in Hot Springs, Arkansas. Now, it didn't take long before the Baker became known as a place where, and I quote, cattle kings and oil tycoons twirled society gals to the sounds of Lawrence Welk and Paul Whitman and other big bands. See, the entire town circled around this. The whole social life of this community revolved around the Baker. And being at the Baker meant you were part of the in crowd in Mineral Wells. Loves were lost, loves were found. Marriages made, marriages destroyed. In its glory days, in the 1930s and 40s, and even in the early part of the 50s, there were several famous people donned the doors of the Baker. Judy Garland, Dorothy L'Amour, Clark Gable, Will Rogers, Helen Keller, Jack Among, Herbie Kay, Guy Lombardo, Mary Martin, of course, Weatherford's own, and also Paul Whitman. And there's not only that, but Lyndon Johnson, Pat Boone, Jack Dempsey, Dale Evans, Will Rogers, Roy Rogers, Elliot Roosevelt. The Three Stooges came down. Sammy Kay and General Pershing came also to relax at the Baker. And it's also said that under assumed names, Bonnie and Clyde had a little stay at the Baker Hotel. See, the Baker Hotel did its part during World War II, like we discussed, and during 3 years of the war, the Baker Hotel was home to dependents of the military personnel. And then post-40s in the war and the 50s, the hotel continued to attract guests, but of course not in the numbers that when it had first opened. See, in the development of modern medicine and federal regulations, the town's mineral water kind of stopped being a big draw for tourists, and then the business gradually died, and was hard for the baker to make money. And in 1963, they actually closed the baker for 2 years. Yes, because it cost so much to run. And citizens of Mineral Wells banded together, and in 1965, they reopened the baker, and it lasted another 8 years. You see, Mr. Baker, whom we discussed built it, lived in a fancy suite on the 10th floor with his family, and also maintained that suite for his red-headed mistress, they said, that lived on the 7th floor. And he lived in this hotel until he died in 1972. And then the baker slid downhill, little by little, that rest of that year. And then in 73, they closed the doors. And the owners, sad to see this great beauty die, over the years sold off its furniture, its fixtures, and anything left of value. And there she stood, the old baker, untouched and unloved, eventually being condemned by the city due to structural problems with the roof. There used to be tours until this closing, and like many of the area's youth, I myself have snuck past there to all the little keep out signs and found ways into this time capsule of our past. See, I never had any strange experiences in the baker, but I know someone personally that did, and several others have reported having some very spooky and frightening things happen. See, back to the 7th floor lady, the mistress we were talking about, there were several stories started surfacing after the hotel closed in 1972. A hotel employee in the 60s came forward and reported the ghost of a woman on the 7th floor. Now, this ghost is commonly believed to be the manager's mistress. Some believe it to be Mr. Baker's mistress, but she lived in a suite of rooms on the southeast corner of the 7th floor. And of course, the legend around town goes that this woman committed suicide, of course, by leaping off the top of the building. Now, some people have reported they even smell her perfume. People have also said that there were glasses found with lipstick stains on the rim when nobody was staying in that suite. It's also said that during that time that this ghost would flirt with men to whom she really took a fancy to, and that she would make sounds and even brush things whenever females would come into the room because she didn't want a woman in there around her men. Some people have even heard in various parts of the hotel the clicking of what they believe to be her high heels on the floors. Now, not too long ago, in the 1990s, you see, folks, there's a bank right across the street. And several of the women sitting at their workstations look up and see the Baker Hotel. And some of them started taking notice that windows would be open on various floors. And then later on that same day, those windows would be closed. And then other windows on different floors would later be open. Now, one of the women, when asked, said she thought it was simply the caretaker of the hotel. And she thought that would just explain what was going on. And they kind of quit paying attention. What they didn't know was there'd been no caretakers in there, of course, since late 72, early 73. No one had stayed in there looking after the place. Now, they talk about the Brazos Room and the Brazos Club. Now, of course, until fairly recently, the Baker Hotel was open for tours. In one sense, one of these tours was a group of World War II veterans and their spouses whom had been in Mineral Wells came back to take a little trip to this area. One of them reported passing the Brazos Room and they could hear the clanking of silverware and dishes. It was also said that they some heard orchestra music being played in the background. And everyone in the tour agreed that they had heard the same thing. Now, some of the stories say that Bonnie and Clyde's spirit haunt the Brazos Room. And if you go into it and really look into it, there was a Ghost Hunters segment done here. And it was said that during that segment that something had turned off one of their cameras during the investigation. Other people have reportedly seen orbs of light in the Brazos Room. They've reportedly had lights go off and on by themselves. And some have even reported smelling chocolate while in the Brazos Room. Now, this is possibly one of the creepiest things. There was a psychic there in Mineral Wells. And they had asked her about these hauntings, and she confirmed them. But she said that she believed that the ghosts that were haunting the baker didn't necessarily die at the baker. she believed that they had such a great time there in their life that after they died, they made their way back to the Baker in hopes of reliving some of their best times. Some even said that there was a murder took place in the kitchen one year. That there was a male cook there that was married, and he had gotten into a huge fight with his girlfriend, who was said to be a maid there, and that she had threatened him with telling his wife about their affair. And he lost his temper. The story goes that he killed her in the pantry, and that one of the sounds of clanking dishes could be heard could possibly be her spirit. They also talk about the mezzanine floor, which is just above the lobby, and people hear smelling cigar smoke, the aroma of cigars, because they say men used to gather in that area to share stories and smoke their cigars. And, like we've discussed before, the sounds of clicking heels and walking could be heard in the hotel lobby. The clicking, the walking, the heels, the smells, it all leads back to the time when the Baker was bumping. But I'm going to share with y'all something from something that I know from someone firsthand. This is really the only cool story I guess I've got to share about a friend. The friend of mine, whom I once worked with, became obsessed with the Baker Hotel and its history. So much so that even after the city closed down the hotel, he would still slip in undetected and act as an on-site security guard, trying to keep people out of the building. Now, we worked together daily, and after the weekends, he'd return to work, and he would fill me in on any of the strange happenings that went down over that weekend. Multiple times, he himself said he had smelled the cigar smoke in certain areas, heard the clinking of glasses. He told me one time he heard the sound of what he thought was big band swing music. He said that he had been into the seventh floor and even smelled perfume in that area. But the strangest thing that he told me was an ongoing story that was visibly taking a toll on him. Being, of course, a bit of a rule breaker and slightly consumed with the Baker's history, he decided one evening that it would be okay and a good idea to remove one of the last few remaining chandeliers from the hotel. See, he had dreams of installing it in his bedroom, big vaulted ceiling. So he managed to construct a way to get this one chandelier down. And the reason it was left was because it was very hard and very dangerous to get to. Wasn't like you propped up a ladder. Wasn't like you could just stroll up and grab it. It was over a vast open stairwell. Well, after he removed it and got it home, we went by his house, on the clock, of course, to see it. He was as proud that day as I ever saw him. Couldn't believe the smile on his face. Sitting on his back porch, on a table, a workbench, was a chandelier. Not large, folks. You could probably almost reach around it. I'm not talking about a vast one. I would say a little bit larger than a tire, you know. But still, an old antique chandelier from the Baker Hotel. Looked at it. He had cleaned it up. It looked wonderful. It wasn't till about 2 weeks later when the trouble actually started. See, he was redoing all the wiring in it and all the light receptacles on it when one night he was awoken by some laughter. Now, he's a single dad and his daughter was older, so he knew it wasn't her making these sounds. So he told me that he got up to investigate and he followed the sound through his house, through the whole house, and towards the back door, where he had the chandelier sitting on a workbench on his back porch. When he opened the door, the laughing stopped. Now, thinking nothing of it, he went back to bed, but this was only the start. From that day forward, he would come to work, and he would tell me these things. His TV would shut off on its own. It would change channels at will. Lights would flicker off and on. He said he felt cold spots in his house that weren't there before. He and his daughter would both hear footsteps, and doors would often open and close at random times throughout the day and the night. But it wasn't until he installed the chandelier itself that things went really deep. I get chills, folks, every time I think of this, because the look on his face the morning after this happened to him, when he told me, was enough to convince me that whatever he had experienced shook him to his core. He told me he finished the project on a Sunday afternoon, and that night he was happy. He was ecstatic. And then he goes and he installs it. And he looks at it all installed. Everything's done. He can't believe how great it looks. It works flawlessly. Lights on, lights off. Now, mind you this. It doesn't match any of the decor in that whole bedroom. It's just this single guy's bedroom and this old chandelier. He's out of his mind excited. And exhausted, of course. You know, it's a lot of work. One man, he hung it by himself. So he says he goes to bed that evening, and sometime in the night, he said he felt a tug or a pat on his foot. He really wasn't sure which. But he turned over, expecting, he said, to see his daughter there. But instead, he said he went from groggy to instantly wide awake. Standing at the foot of his bed was a young boy, no more than 12, he said, dressed like a shoeshine boy from the 20s or 30s. Now, my friend told me he sat straight up in bed staring at this boy, this ghostly image of a young child at the foot of his bed. Now, he says that the child took one step back away from his bed, holding eye contact and slowly shaking his head like he was saying no. The boy then turned and walked straight through the bedroom wall out towards the living room. Now, of course, I'd like to tell you it ended there. But my friend is a bit hard-headed, and these type of sightings went on for about 3 weeks, and it wasn't until the boy started making himself known to my friend's daughter, and that's kind of when it escalated, and that's when my buddy was like, look, something's got to happen. He said that he tried talking to this spirit, but nothing. Now, he said things started rustling around in the house, like paper rustling sounds. And then sometimes at night, of course, he said not only did he see this boy, but when he got really disturbed was he said that he would see the boy walk sometimes, catch it out of the corner of his eye. He also saw small, shadowy figures tagging along with the boy, moving like small, disfigured bodies. That's what he described them as. Now, of course, after the shadow creature sightings, he broke down. He's done. He took down the chandelier, took all the old wire that he had pulled out of it, and whatever else he had hauled back, loaded it all up, and one evening drove it back to the baker. Now, he said he didn't rehang it, but he did tell me that he put it somewhere safe where no one else would find it and make the same mistake or even disturb the chandelier like he did. Now, after that, everything stopped, and he hasn't had any other experiences. Now, he changed jobs, and I haven't spoken to him, you know, face-to-face, folks, for the last 5 or 6 years. But I know that the encounter he had with whatever it was disturbed him and turned him off from the baker. That was it, and he found a new hobby. So, whatever it was, he wanted no part of it. Now, for those of you that are interested still in the baker, it's on the books right now to have a rebirth, folks. Several investors are working with the city to get the baker back to its original glory. I've heard tale that if they pass legalized gambling in the state of Texas, that they're going to turn it into a large casino. At least the first two floors. That's what they're looking to try to do.
That'd be cool.
I can't find it online where they've talked about it, but there's a lot of discussion in it. So folks, if you'd like to check out any of the baker, you want to see some pictures of it, any of that stuff, go visit thebakerhotel.com. That's the one where the group is. They'll tell you a little bit of the history about it. That's the story that I got from my friend. I thought it was funny because before I really knew about the smell of perfume, the smell of cigar smoke, I've heard those stories coming from him multiple times. I've heard about him also talking about seeing a light in there, and he thought he was following somebody one time, and he was chasing that light going from room to room as it went up to the top. He said when he got to the top, it wasn't there anymore. He got up to Mr. Baker's suite or whatever, and he's like, it's not there in the whole thing. And like I said, this buddy of mine's been top to bottom. The spa, they had an indoor spa, almost like an indoor pool. And he said you could go into that indoor pool in that area that was run down. He said he would hide in there in the dark. And we're talking about this whole took place at night. He said you could hear the sounds of people faintly like laughing and carrying on. He said, and he used to always say, I don't know if it's echoes coming from the outside or if it's actually something in this building. But he talked about smelling the smells, hearing the sounds, seeing the lights, finding stuff. And I remember him telling me a story about there was even old mattresses and things still left in there from the 70s that were still in there, dusty and dust covered and all that. And he said, I remember going in one of the rooms looking where I thought I heard something, come out, go back 5 minutes later, and they would be dusty prints, like somebody had sat down or put their hands down, different stuff in the dust. He's like, so you never really know what was going on. But he said he had there was a ton of them that he would tell me that was some very uneasy feelings that went on there. But he said that he never felt threatened. He never felt like there was any animosity by any of that until he brought that thing home. He said, no, I don't know how a young boy would attach himself to a chandelier at all. He goes, I don't have any idea. And then, of course, we kicked around. I'm like, well, what if he was a shoeshine boy and that was like his favorite light? You know, what? Maybe he died young there. We don't really know. You know, we have no clue of what it was. I can't even explain it. But I do know that when it started happening, there was a month or so there to where I could visibly tell that there was, whether it happened or not, he thought it did. And it was really affecting him until he took all that stuff back.
Wow. That's crazy, right?
That's insane.
How many times have you heard these stories where people removed something from a Native American burial ground? Or they removed, you know, just some little trinket. It could be super small and that causes like poltergeist activity or whatever to occur. And it's not until that thing, that item is returned, that it all goes away.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Well, let's take a break, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives. You know, I drive by the Baker Hotel from time to time when I'm, you know, working out in that area or, you know, going fishing out at PK or something. And I really never knew that much history about it. I always wondered, like, wonder what it looks like inside and stuff. And of course, you can go online and find that out. But when I was younger, you couldn't. You couldn't go online and find that kind of stuff.
No.
So it does look pretty cool. I wonder, you know, how many of these places like that are truly haunted, or it's just people's imaginations kind of getting the best of them. But I mean, obviously your friend, he wasn't imagining that. I mean, that stuff was transpiring not just at the hotel, but at his actual house.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, you wake up in the middle of the night and you see a little boy there. Would you like a shine? You know, you got your shine box, mister. You know, he wants to shine your boots or shoes. You know, that's crazy. I would be terrified if I saw something like that. But it doesn't seem like, you know, some people don't have a problem with it at all. They're just like, oh, whatever, I heard some laughing, I'm going to go back, roll over and go to sleep.
Well, that's the way he was when he first went to visiting the Baker, and I was talking to him about it. I'm like, dude, you know, you're not supposed to be in there, you know. And he had been caught by the cops several times and asked to leave and all this stuff. But he would always go over there because he felt like it was strange. I've never met someone that felt like they had a pull to a place. And he said he actually felt like he was being pulled to that place. Like, that's what he should do. I don't know if you could say, you know, past life, maybe he, you know, something had helped him there and when he passed and then he came back and he felt like the need to give back or something like that. I don't know, but I do know when he would tell me that story about that boy and all that stuff. And what's funny is he laughed at first when he first saw it. He was like, thought it was a joke. He got a kick out of it. It wasn't until later when he went to seeing those little shadow creatures with it or whatever it was that he was like, you know what? Something's not right. You know, this ain't cool. And that's when, like I said, it went to affecting his daughter, and then he couldn't deal with it anymore. He's like, I'm done.
That is terrifying.
Yeah.
What else you got? What do you got going on this week, Brad?
Man, oh man, I'm going to get on the water. That's it. I've got the yak out. I've got her cleaned up. That be looking too. I'm going to be working on some videos. They're going to be coming out real soon. I'd say within either probably this week, I'll probably release one or two this week. So we're going to have some video stuff coming up on the YouTube channel, just a bunch of stuff going on. I've been monkeying around with Photoshop. I got all kinds of wild stuff going on now.
You know, the weather has been beautiful, but what's scary to me is I don't ever remember it being this warm in February. It makes me real leery of what it's going to be like in July and August if it's already this warm. Do you ever think about that? I mean, I think about it just from the insects standpoint.
Yeah, it's going to be bad. I'm afraid so.
We usually get a couple freezes, a couple days of snow to kind of kill all those off. I hate spiders, and I'm already seeing nests.
Yeah.
But these things are going to be breeding out of control. So that is terrifying. Before we get out of here, let's like to mention our sponsors once again. Our terrific sponsors, Gaia.com, G-A-I-A.com. Like I said, it's a video streaming service, much like Netflix or Hulu or these other services. There's over 7,000 titles. You can go over there and you can sign up for a monthly fee and have access to these videos. Starting February 8th, there's a new show coming out called Truth Hunters, with Linda Moulton Howell, and she's exploring things around alien encounters. It's very interesting. This is brand new, and this is about to premiere on February 8th. Check this out.
What happened in Rendlesham Forest on December 26, 1980 was apparently of great interest to America's Defense Intelligence Agency. The DIA had remote viewers working at Fort Meade, Maryland. Their goal was to research how accurately psychic abilities could be used in their spy program called Stargate. The first time someone in a serious government capacity talked to me about one of the alien presences on Earth was a Washington, D.C. military source. He claimed firsthand interaction with at least one type of non-human. He agreed to talk with me off the record about the gray type that he knew as Ebens. Our universe is paired to another universe, which is completely opposite of this one. We move through a tunnel into the mirror universe where it is all light. There, time moves to the past.
There you go. So you need to check that out. It's called Truth Hunter with Linda Moulton Howell. Now, I love Linda. I met her last year at the Ozark Mountain UFO Conference, which we'll be attending again this year. And I believe she's going to be there, so I'm going to try to talk to her again. Maybe be able to arrange a live interview with her. That would be really cool.
Yeah, we'll get her to sit down with us.
She's a sweet old lady.
Whoa. You can't say sweet old lady. She's a sweet lady.
I'm sorry. Sweet lady. She's smaller. Much smaller than I thought
that
she would be.
That was me. I thought she's going to be a lot taller.
Yeah,
and I'm not very big, and I get up and I'm like, she's tiny.
She's tiny and frail, right? But a wonderful woman, super sweet, super nice. And if you're not familiar with Linda Moulton Howell, shame on you. She did a lot of the investigations on cattle mutilations back in the day. She's written a couple books on the fact, on the strange things surrounding that conspiracy. Our other fantastic sponsor is Blue Apron. That's blueapron.com. This is a delivery service that delivers high quality meals to your door, and you cook them with your family or by yourself, depending on, you know, what kind of plan you're going with. They have a family plan. They have a two-person plan. And great food. It's very fresh. The ingredients are amazing. They work with local farmers to get this stuff. And I suggest you sign up for that. Just go to blueapron.com/expanded. If you'd like to share a story of your own, you can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com, or you can call the show, 817-945-3828, and you can leave us a message. We're not there manning the phones ourselves, but you can leave us a message. If you'd like to get more of Expanded Perspectives, can't talk, Cam, don't forget, this is only half of our shows. There's another whole set of shows called Expanded Perspectives Elite. You can sign up by going to the website, expandedperspectives.com. And for $5 a month, you'll get an additional show every Friday, as well as access to the entire back catalog. Well over 100 episodes over there. So like I said, if you're a fan of Expanded Perspectives and you're not an Elite member, then you really are missing out. I've got a pretty easy week myself, trying to get ready to go on my ski trip. Cam, I know you've been working hard. You just said they were recalibrating some equipment you're using.
Oh, yeah, I got some of that stuff going. It's all up and up, and I've got a couple of meetings to go to this week. I'm going to be busy this week. But you know what? I like it. Makes the week go by, and it makes me look forward to going fishing this coming weekend.
Well, before we get out of here, I hope no one out there spent all of their money on some stupid Super Bowl bet. I hope everybody out there has an incredible week. Call somebody you know. Wish them good luck. Give them a hug. Tell them you love them. For you Elite members, we'll be speaking to you on Friday. For everyone else, we'll speak to you next Monday. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.
nature, none can see.